Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to AI Named This Show. I'm Tasia Custody.
And I'm Tristan Jutra.
And we are your human hosts on this week's episode. Was the Sora Airhead video really real? We discuss who's suing OpenAI now. We learn about a mysterious new chatbot. Plus, we've got more LLM and AI assistant news from Yelp and Anthropic. And hello, hi to our listeners in Malaysia. Once again, Tristan, I think we've said hello to lovely listeners in Malaysia, but I could not find proof. Have we hallucinated this whole thing? Are we in a simulation?
I don't know what's even happening anymore.
All right, I'm going to kick us off with a little bit of follow-up. So did you ever see the Sora like balloon, like airhead video? Did you see this as one of the ones that they came out a couple weeks after Sora was released?
I don't think I did.
Okay.
There was so many cool Sora videos, but that's one I missed.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you a quick little recap. They obviously, OpenAI gave access to certain groups of creatives. And one of those teams of creatives was Shy Kids. And they created this really incredible video of a man with a yellow balloon for a head. And it was aptly titled Airhead.
Naturally.
It's really cute. And it's got these little cute vignette scenes of him like walking around.
I saw
around.
A little bit of this actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Him as a child, him at prom, him riding a bike, you know, all this kind of stuff and living his life as an airhead.
His best life.
Yeah, exactly. So at the time, you know, it was said to be generated using Sora. Like that it was used as one of their promotional videos. Like, oh, look what can be done now. It's a really cool video. Well, as it turns out, as good as Sora is at generating video from prompts, there were a lot of things that either it couldn't do or didn't produce like the filmmakers really wanted. And anyone in the movie business or film business or video business or is an editor or anything behind the scenes knows exactly what that's like. So while Sora had an understanding of typical film shots, Sora had no understanding of typical film shots. So, you know, when they would say things like panning and tracking and zooming. So the team basically had to go in after and create that. So they created like a pan and a tilt shot out of existing static clips. So while Sora is very capable of outputting lengthy videos based on long text prompts, there's not really a guarantee that the subjects in each prompt are going to remain consistent throughout. So from one output clip to another. And it took a lot of work and experimentation and prompts to get videos that connected these different shots into somewhat of like a semi-coherent connected video as a whole. And I wondered that, like when I was watching it, I thought, because I noticed a few sections where like the balloon shape is different. You know what I mean? Like say instead of like an ovaly or like one that comes to a point, it was like maybe more round. And so I was thinking at the time like, oh, I wonder if that was just an issue with the consistency because Sora can't really output like that exact same balloon each time. So that was indeed part of the case. So in the original idea that Sora had for them, it was that every balloon had a string attached and the Shy Kids team had to then basically like edit that out of each frame because they didn't want that. And Sora also wanted to put a drawing on the face of the balloons in like most of the shots and they didn't want that. So while the final video features a yellow balloon in each shot, the Sora output usually had different balloon colors. So then the Shy Kids went and adjusted that in post. The Shy Kids team, I should say, went and adjusted that in post. So they actually told FX Guide that all the video they used is Sora output. So like everything in general. So technically, Tristan, it was output from Sora. It's just that they then, like, if they had used that video untouched, it really wouldn't have been like cohesive. It would have lacked the continuity of what we see now as this like wistful final product. And my question to you is really, do we care? Because it's still very, like my first part is, it's still very cool. And it did technically output the video. You just then put the finesse on it. And also, I think maybe that's a good thing because this is what we always talk about, which is like AI working in step with us to create this type of excellent content, not like that fear that we heard a lot about, you know, when AI was first on the scene of it's taking our jobs. Like this to me is how it should be used. Like give me that incredible output and I'm going to tweak it to exactly what I need. You know what I mean? Like we still need the editors, we still need the filmmakers, we still need the storytellers to get it, yeah, that beautiful, yeah, cohesive look.
For sure. There's a couple of things here. One is, just like you say, this is a tool to help us get to where we want to go. It's not necessarily a tool to get us 100% there. We should expect, whether we're using generative AI to create text or audio or imagery, or in this case, video, just to be able to, you know, throw in a prompt and then, you know, walk away and our work is done here is maybe a little too much to ask for. We talked on another show, Momentous Live, our colleague Will, he uses Midjourney for a lot of his image creation, but almost invariably he touches things up in Photoshop because he knows how to use Photoshop, which is another tool in his toolkit. So similarly, you have a tool like Sora generate high quality video for you, can still save you tons and tons of time either in the field or in like producing, you know, 3D animated video. And then you tweak it up a little bit using the other tools in your toolkit. It would be very handy if it did things like layers and whatnot, but that's of course not going to be the case. But I think the other issue here is, what was the representation by OpenAI in sharing some of these videos from creators? If they're basically saying, oh yeah, this is pure output from Sora, well, that's not really cool, and nor is it accurate. But if they have some caveats, oh, some adjustments or editing or post-production was applied to it, fair enough. So I think it's just a question of managing people's expectations and representing accurately what the tool can actually do for you. And then the whole point about, you know, having the consistency between the different shots, tools like Sora and others are adding capabilities to be able to remember what it is. They remember the same seed so that when it does additional shots, it can retain some of those details. So you're not starting from scratch each time. So that was something that they were having to manually override. Maybe that tool hadn't been built in yet. But same kind of thing for image generation. Like when you're doing a bunch of variations on a theme, you don't want to have to like start from scratch every single time. If you've got a good look, you just want to tweak a little feature. That's like with the editing features we've seen introduced to DALL-E. We're keeping most of what we want and just, you know, tweaking the periphery a little bit. So I think, you know, it's maybe much ado about nothing in this case, but it's a question of accurately representing and managing people's expectations. This is a tool. This is not to replace, you know, it's like you don't generate have ChatGPT write an article for you and you walk away and that's done. And that's how you get low quality slop that is like infiltrating the internet right now and poisoning search results. How about you have, you know, some professional input from you? Or maybe you're using these tools to edit rather than just generate en masse. So, yeah, there's a few things going on here, but I don't think it's too much to get worked up about. These are tools. Use them like tools. Don't use them to replace people like wholesale. That's not going to work great, at least not for a week or two.
The slogan of our show. So last week we talked a little bit about the Rabbit R1, and you've got a bit of follow-up for me, don't you?
Well, yeah, there was some very, very early initial impressions from people that we talked about last week. Now some of the slightly deeper dives are happening from reviewers such as Marquez Brownlee and his channel MKBHD. We've got Dave2D as well. And like with the Humane AI pin, the reviews aren't super charitable at this point. Marquez Brownlee questioned the R1's functionality and this entire trend of releasing quote unquote unfinished products. He calls it borderline non-functional and akin to an Android app rather than a standalone AI gadget. Hold that thought for a moment because we'll come back to that. So basically this he calls out this trend in the tech industry where whether it's hardware, games, cars, and now AI gadgets are kind of released in a half-broken state with the promises of future improvements. And we talked last week about, the whole notion of the MVP, the minimum viable product, get it out the door and fix it in the field because we have the opportunity to do software updates. Remember back in the old days when gadgets were just dumb, or software was in a box at the local computer store and pre-web, the patches were very hard to come by. Maybe mailing some floppy diskettes through the post or something like that. So nowadays, in the interests of speed, a lot of organizations are trying to get stuff to market to grab that mind share and market share. And in the case of the Humane AI pin and the Rabbit R1, as we've discussed as well, part of it is getting these devices into the marketplace before the larger, slower moving tech giants like Google and Apple can really wholeheartedly bake this kind of functionality into their device and possibly obviate the need for some of these other AI device, standalone AI devices. So Dave2D had similar concerns in his We Gotta Talk video. We'll include a link to that in the show notes. But sort of a follow-on to that story is Android Authority dug in. They came in hot claiming that the Rabbit R1 is simply just another Android app. A tipster had shared the R1's launcher APK, and they installed it on a Pixel 6a, replicating some R1 functionalities. So Android Authority's Michel Rahman experimented with the launcher APK on a Pixel 6a and revealing it could function similarly to the R1 device. And so, of course, now people are questioning, what do we even need a device like this for? Suggesting that, this could simply be an app on a phone. And this is
what you and I have been saying this whole time. What even is it for? We don't want to replace the device we have. Just add something to the device we have.
Exactly. So, of course, Rabbit CEO Jesse Liu came out with a statement emphasizing that the R1 runs on a specialized OS. It's Rabbit OS, and it could be a customized version of Android. Android, is certain versions of Android are open source. Of course, they've got their cloud aspect to it, and the local local APA can't fully replicate all of which ties the Rabbit R1 experience together. So they claim, and in the statement they said, Rabbit R1 is not an Android app. Okay, well, maybe kind of an Android app. Anyway, he added that the company is aware that there are, quote, unofficial RabbitOS app/website emulators out there, unquote, and is discouraging their use. Quote, we understand the passion that people have to get a taste of our AI and LAM, large action model, instead of waiting for their R1 to arrive. That being said, to clear any misunderstanding and set the record straight, RabbitOS and LAM run on the cloud with very bespoke AOSP, that's the open source Android version, and lower level firmware modifications. Therefore, a local bootleg APK without the proper OS and cloud endpoints won't be able to access our service. RabbitOS is customized for R1 and we do not support third-party clients. Using a bootlegged APK or web client carries significant risks. Malicious actors are known to publish bootlegged apps that steal your data. For this reason, we recommend that users avoid these bootlegged Rabbit OS apps. Fair enough. Kind of like, if you want to mess around, use and get this running on your own Android device, use at your own risk. it might be half broken, and you could be opening yourself up to you know, malicious actors, possibly, if you're just downloading some random R1 emulator type thing out there. So, but yeah, you know, it's up to Rabbit to continue to add functionality more than the sort of four or five key things at launch and get those progressive updates out. And speaking of updates, they had a software update that addressed one of its key issues, which was the idle battery performance. They claim to improve the idle battery performance by up to 5x. And a lot of people were experiencing battery drain, which was a major concern for the early adopters. Apparently, this update includes also improved music playback, user interface, better Bluetooth reliability, and a fix for a car compatibility issue. And of course, despite this update, many concerns remain that the R1 lacks sufficient functionality, with hopes for more features in future updates. So keep those updates coming, Rabbit, because otherwise, you know, Apple and Google are going to get on there, and you've got to get as many of these devices out the door. You may have pre-sold 100,000 of them, but I don't know. I mean, I hope for these little startups to have some success, but it's up to them to prove their worth in this competitive market space, because no others aren't going to just sit idly by and let and as we also discussed, it's a big hill to climb to justify yet another device, in our pockets or on our on our chest or what have you, mm-hmm. because the trend for so long is toward convergence. Okay, we're eliminating our MP3 players and our digital cameras and our, our cassette decks, our voice recorders, et cetera, et cetera. All these things are built into one now. Now we're fragmenting into multiple devices again. I mean, some people do it for, for retro reasons, whether apparently the Youngs are using compact point and shoot cameras again. I don't know how many actually are. Of course, there's always going to be a market for things like film and, or like dedicated music players, but it's a pretty niche. Again, this sort of application may end up being pretty niche unless they're able to find a wide appeal or get bought out, have their technology built into that of some of the other players. Again, fingers crossed that they make it work. They should get some glasses out and compete with Meta.
Well, to shift gears a little bit, Tristan, I want to introduce a new segment on the show. It's going to be called Who's Suing OpenAI Now? So Microsoft and OpenAI are being sued yet again by the Chicago Tribune and the New York Daily Times and a few other publications. So here's the deal. There's a group of publications, including those two, that accuse both companies of using their copyrighted materials for AI training. So there are 8 publications total owned by Alden Capital Group, ACG. I'm going to talk about them a little bit later. They've accused Microsoft and OpenAI of purloining millions. I think I'm saying that right, Tristan. There's word of the day for you, purloining.
Sounds like the kind of word AI would use.
It certainly does. Well, that's what they're accusing them of doing, purloining millions of their copyrighted articles, quote, without permission and without payment to fuel the commercialization of their generative artificial intelligence products, including ChatGPT and Copilot. So as we know, Tristan, and as many listeners may know, this is just the latest lawsuit filed against Microsoft and OpenAI for their use of copyrighted materials, because you might remember the big guns, the big one we've talked about before, the New York Times, also sued them last year, alleging that they used almost a century's worth of copyrighted content. This included citing articles back nearly word for word, so they claimed. So ACG's newspapers complain of the exact same thing, that the company's chatbots are reproducing their articles word for word just shortly after they're published online without any prominent link back to the sources. But there's even more. The chatbots are allegedly attributing inaccurate reporting to ACG's publications. So hallucinations, anybody? Yeah. They argued that OpenAI and Microsoft pay for the computers, the specialized chips, and the electricity they use to build and operate their generative AI products. And yet, they're using copyrighted articles, quote, without permission and without paying for the privilege. So the complaint also referenced OpenAI's previous admission that it would be impossible to train today's leading AI models without using copyrighted materials. Do you remember that, Tristan? They had a legit blog post they posted publicly online where they said that. I don't know why they would admit that, but they did. But that's a whole, they argue Fair Use Act and all that kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. we have heard this before. So the publications, what are they seeking, Tristan? They are seeking an unspecified amount in damages, and they're asking the court to order the defendants to destroy GPT and LLM models that use their materials. We heard this exact language before. That is a big ask. You're asking them to destroy their business, essentially.
Straight to the wood chipper.
Yep. Just throw it all out is what you're asking them to do. So it's kind of wild. This is just the latest. And I don't know next week what next week will bring, Tristan, on who's suing who. But I thought it might be a fun little tie-in to tell you maybe like a good thing that's happening with OpenAI and one of their partnerships. Because we've talked before about how a lot of these companies are starting to partner with these publications now, maybe to try and not get sued like OpenAI is being sued all the time. But this is just one of many new deals between OpenAI and publishers, and that's OpenAI partnering with the Financial Times for their content. So the Financial Times called the deal with OpenAI a strategic partnership. The 100 million plus users of ChatGPT are going to have direct access to summaries, quotes, and links to the publisher's articles. So this content is usually hidden behind a paywall, but not anymore. OpenAI will attribute all information from the Financial Times to the publication. And in exchange, OpenAI is going to help them develop new AI tools. And just so you know, like, the Financial Times already does use certain OpenAI products like ChatGPT Enterprise. So, and they're very, very careful to say this is not going to ruin the journalistic integrity of the Financial Times. They made sure to say all of that. So it's nice, you know, we don't want all doom and gloom and sue. We want how these partnerships are working. So we'll see how this works out for them. It's new, but it's just one of many, and we'll see how many companies follow suit.
We'll see how this actually affects the quality of the Financial Times' journalism. That's, you know, that's with some of these deals we're seeing, it's like, oh, well, they're not actually giving them cash. They're giving them access to their own generative AI tools, and then it's the snake eating its tail. And I hope they'll be using these tools, like as we alluded to earlier, in a discerning, you know, mindful way, and not as in a wholesale, hey, let's just use this to replace reporters and actual journalists kind of way. When it comes to the previous case too, you know, it's one of those things like, oh, we just have to destroy the models, because then that's what the ask is there, which is obviously a big ask. Because with the way that these models work, it's not like they're training on all the content, but they're not necessarily retaining it in the kind of way we expect, even though sometimes they're able to regurgitate the content verbatim. It's probably only because maybe they've seen that content a few times, like across the web, and using its probabilistic models, these articles are kind of coming out that way because that's the way it's seen it a number of times. But the way these things are designed, it's not like they can go into its brain and excise just those things. You would, if that were the case, it would be on another layer of the stack, a little higher up from the model itself, more in the grounding layer. And that's not where these models are learning most of the stuff. Like, you know, that's where they're applying all their special safety rules and whatnot. It's like, oh, like we want to avoid things like, you know, violent and hateful speech and that kind of stuff. That's happening on that extra layer, but the training layer down below, that's where they're ingesting stuff like New York Times's articles. And once they've done that, it's kind of gone. These words in those articles, they're just now tokens that are being associated with one another. So it's not quite so simple. And maybe hence the request to just simply have the models destroyed altogether. Maybe they realize that that's the only way to do it. And this could be a negotiating tactic. Maybe they will eventually go down the path of, say, the Financial Times and others that have struck deals. We shall see. But I think this may be a recurring segment. Who's suing OpenAI next? And the other half of it, because who's making deals with OpenAI next?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
And my big question for you is, who's the mystery chatbot on the block? That's what I want to know.
So last weekend, there was a mystery chatbot appeared, and people, you know, it's like, what is this thing? And it's like, it's called GPT-2 chatbot. And like, that's strange. We're already at, you know, GPT, you know, 4 turbo now. What is this GPT-2? And it showed up in the, I believe it was in the playground. Let's see. It appeared in the LMSYS chatbot arena, sparking speculation that it could be a test version of OpenAI's GPT 4.5 or even GPT-5. Everyone's waiting for GPT-5, right? The model is only accessible in this chatbot arena website with a rate limit of just 8 queries per day, restricting detailed testing. Of course, if you can only, you know, throw 8 things at it a day, it kind of hard to, you know, put it through its paces. So some of the early users have reported impressive reasoning and problem-solving abilities, but Ars Technica, one of the publications reporting on it, their own tests yielded unimpressive results with mistakes and awkward language noted. And despite speculation and a cryptic tweet from Sam Altman, who said of something to the effect of, I've always had a soft spot for GPT-2, the true nature and origin of the GPT-2 chatbot remain unknown. So some of the speculation is that it's actually GPT-2 that's been dusted off, and with some updates, some modernizations applied to it. So GPT-2 is probably from 2021 at this point, I believe. So it's not totally useless. There was it could do a fair bit, but GPT-3 was the big one, and that's the one that went public in November of 2022, and so that's one people are most familiar with. And then, of course, since then, GPT-4, which is available through the ChatGPT Plus subscription. So it could very well be that they are repurposing some of the older models, which maybe run at more efficiently or at a lower cost. They're not quite so big, and with some other enhancements, can still serve some purpose for some people, and maybe that's in testing. So we have yet to get an official word from OpenAI on that, and by the time y'all hear this, there may be, and we'll be talking about it again next week. But it's people are just waiting for GPT-5 or at least 4.5, and like, is this it? Well, no, it's called GPT-2. Maybe it is what it says on the tin, but with a bit of extra special sauce or pixie dust sprinkled on it there to see what it can do, because these are all sunk costs, right? Like, if we can get some, figure out a way to repurpose it or monetize it or use it for educational purposes or whatnot, go to town. So watch this space for future updates.
It's funny when you get when your mind's on something and you think, this has got to be that thing. Yes, and they're calling it the old thing. I mean, come on, people. But maybe we were wrong, and it's just this great, like, guerrilla marketing tactic. And get people talking about it before it's out. But did you know, Tristan, that Yelp is really upping their AI assistant game, and they're getting into the whole AI and TikTok style video realm? How do you feel about that?
Perfect. Well,
perfect.
They got to do something to stay relevant before they get totally disintermediated by not only Google, but now all these LLMs. So the human reviews, And that's a thing. So let's get the AI in there too.
Yeah. So the announcement said that Yelp's AI assistant takes discovering and connectivity with local businesses a step further by offering a conversational chat experience to help users find the right professionals in categories like home, local, audio, auto, beauty, pet, real estate, professional, event planning, financial services, and more. Basically everything, but that's their official part of their official statement. So here's how it works. When you start a chat with Yelp Assistant, it's going to ask you a follow-up question or a series of follow-up questions in order to understand your project or your problem or your inquiry, and it'll provide relevant businesses and even draft and submit a detailed request perhaps to those businesses on your behalf, including inquiries about pricing and availability. So Yelp said that project submissions are sent to both advertisers and non-advertisers based on business relevance and eligibility for the project submitted through Yelp Assistant. So people were a bit confused at first when they initially released the statement because they made it seem like it was to sponsored businesses. They have since said, nope, it's for relevant businesses, assuming you make sure you're doing the proper stuff on the back end so that your business is relevant and shows up as a good business on this chatbot. But anyway, Yelp Assistant can be found in the Projects tab on Yelp now, and it is available on iOS. It will be rolling out to Android users later this summer. Here's what's crazier. Without knowing this, I Googled something earlier today. Like, best, I can't even remember what. And, best house cleaner near me, because we clean our house ourselves. We don't have any help or anything, but we have family in town, and then there's a quick turnaround. More families coming into town. I have like one day to get everything cleaned up. And so I was like, oh, shoot, maybe I should get help. And so I just Googled like best house cleaners near me. And I clicked, my own fault, not reading, clicked on the first Yelp like thing result, that came up. And I thought I was just going to Yelp. And all of a sudden, I was in this like questionnaire situation asking me follow-up questions about how quickly do I need the service? Do I have any additional needs like deep cleaning or window cleaning or carpet cleaning or other? And I was like, what is happening? So I went down the rabbit hole because I was like, I don't know what this is. Let me see what's going on.
And it, too late now.
Right? It's too late now. And it wanted me to go through this whole checklist and series of questions. And then it was going to connect me. Well, it wasn't going to connect me. On my behalf, it was going to submit my query and my needs for this project to any available businesses near me. And they would get back to me with quotes. I didn't do it. I didn't go down the rabbit hole. I didn't do it. But I just was like, oh, this isn't what I thought I was clicking on, but cool. So that is also something that's at least new to me. Maybe others have experienced that on the web, but this specific AI assistant they're saying is available on iOS and soon for Android. So kind of interesting if it works, Tristan. I mean, because I can see the frustration if it doesn't, and it's just putting you, asking you dumb questions like chatbots can, and putting you around, and you just want to see human reviews on a site. You know what I mean? Like, are we getting too convoluted? Like, I just want to know what Sarah thinks about this restaurant. That's what I want to know. I want to see a picture of the food. So we'll see.
For sure. I think, I mean, especially given that they've framed it as projects, it seems to me it is for larger ticket sort of user initiatives here, and it's not merely for something, you know, like restaurants, of course, if you're, you know, home services or, you know, repairs, renovations and stuff like that. And if it is powered by a reasonably smart LLM that, you know, of course, good at language and hopefully, you know, has got a long enough context window that it can retain all the details that you've given it, and it can package that up and present it to potential contractors. Cool. Yeah. I mean, that could save you potentially a whole lot of time, and especially if you can get some competitive bids coming your way. It's just basically a different paradigm for gathering that information from a user. So instead of having to fill out a form, you're just having a conversation with the chatbot. Now, next week, we'll probably have a little follow-up story on how people are rebelling because now that Yelp is infested with AI, just like people were choked about Snapchat and all the Meta apps. So We'll see how well this goes over, but it's interesting that they're limiting just to the projects tab, and that probably makes sense because, at least for now, you test it out where it's not exposed to everyone. And then if it works well, then maybe they'll have the main Yelp interface be more conversational, where you say, if you're looking for the best sushi restaurant in this price range, in this locale that, features, this dish and this dish and, this service and, has this kind of sake in stock, maybe, right? Like that could get interesting for the even more everyday, consumer applications. But it's probably smart not to put it all across the board. Like, I mean, Meta went in hard, right? I've heard from all sorts of people that just in the past week since we last talked about it, about how, I was trying to use a Facebook search and now they got this like AI thing and I'm all confused. so one step at a time.
Yeah. You remember we talked about that last week and I was telling you how on Instagram, because remember people were like upset about it on Instagram and I was saying, like it is different because it's down a bit in the screen and it's kind of confuddled and sometimes you actually press it. So my niece is here visiting. She's 19 for context. And the other day we were looking for something on Instagram and she hit the search thing and accidentally hit, because it's right there on the left, hit the little A, Meta AI, and she goes, ew, gross. So that's from a 19-year-old, was ew, gross. She didn't want to talk to this Meta AI, so just so you know.
All right. Be warned, LLM makers and app makers. The youngs may not be countenancing your AI shenanigans.
They just want their search, Tristan.
One large language model that we haven't maybe given quite enough airtime to, we've mentioned it once or twice, is Claude by Anthropic. There may be a reason for that, and we'll get to that, at least from my perspective, we'll get to that reason in just a minute. But one of the other reasons could be they have never really had a mobile app until now. So that's the big news. One of the big news items this week, Anthropic has launched an iOS app for its Claude 3 AI models, allowing users to interact with the chatbot and perform image analysis directly from their mobile devices. So this, of course, enhances accessibility and productivity with features like a 200,000 context window and a camera integration. Of course, while Anthropic is just introducing the Claude app now, OpenAI's ChatGPT and Google's Gemini have had established mobile applications for months and months, so they've got quite the lead. The Claude 3 family of AI chatbots, which include, here we go, Claude Sonnet, Claude Opus, and Claude Haiku.
Oh boy.
I wonder if the order is wrong. Maybe Haiku's the smallest and Sonnet the middle and Opus the biggest. That would make sense if people know what those words mean. They each have different model sizes. This family is gaining popularity for its abilities in analysis, forecasting, content creation, code generation, and multilingual conversations. So there's a little bit more to this story as well. There's a couple of things tied together here. And that is, so Claude 3, of course, is noted for its human-like understanding, making it appealing to not only the general public, but also for businesses, for a variety of applications. So with that in mind, Anthropic is rolling out a Claude team plan for $30 per seat per month, enabling group access and collaboration on the Claude AI models. So far, companies like Pfizer and the PGA Tour are integrating Claude into their operations, utilizing its capabilities to improve content production and work processes. So we're seeing more and more companies like this thinking about the enterprise market, Microsoft most notably. Of course, we've got Google too. And then there was some news from Amazon with their Q chatbot, which is helps with developers and a lot of enterprise applications too. So this is the way things are going, like the big money is in enterprise. If you can get the mind share, if the general public from your public facing apps, cool. But a lot of times, remember back in the day, Slack was a bottom up phenomenon. People were using Slack and getting it into organizations through the back door. So maybe that's the hope here. If you've got some Claude fans, they start using that, maybe instead of Copilot or ChatGPT for various reasons, maybe they can convince their organizations to use a Claude team plan. But one of the reasons we haven't talked about cloud a whole heck of a lot, is if you look on anthropic.com/cloud-ai-locations, they have literally dozens of countries where Claude is officially supported. I'll draw your attention to the seas.
Oh, no.
We've got Bolivia, we've got Botswana, and then we go straight to Cape Verde and Chile and Colombia. It's like, hello, Canada is a thing still, isn't it? So I have not spent as much time with Claude as I should.
Regulations, perhaps? Regulations?
I don't even know. So, but pro tip for any users in Canada or any other countries not on this list is that you can still access the Claude models using the Poe app on your smartphone. So that's Poe, P-O-E. And I believe that was created from the makers of, what's that question and answer engine whose name is escaping me with all the smart people? Well, it used to be smart people hanging out and...
Ask Jeeves?
Quora. Yeah, Ask Jeeves. That's right. You know that one from the 90s?
You know that one?
The butler? Quora. So the makers of Quora created Poe, and I think we talked about that in the past. So Poe, you can like use all sorts of different models and select, including Mixtral and others and lots of the open source ones. But you can access Claude through the Poe app, even if you're not in one of the officially released countries there. So that's just a little bit of news on the Claude front for those who might be interested.
What a great way to end the show, TJ. We did it.
It's the feel-good story of the summer. I mean, it's an emotional roller coaster ride. Oh, sorry. Oh, but maybe there's still hope.
You dangled that carrot, Tristan.
Just don't forget about Canada. Come on, folks.
Come on, folks. And that's the byline to today's episode. Don't forget about Canada. Well, wherever you're listening to this, whether it be Canada or wherever in the world, thank you so much for tuning in.
Malaysia, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for tuning in to AI Named This Show. If you enjoyed this episode, please, please, please give us a rating and review on your favorite podcast app.
AI and goodbye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.